Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the militarization of America's police forces and examine how some of the most advanced lethal and non-lethal military equipment in the world is going to police forces across the country to be used against U.S. citizens. Rania Kalik, a Washington, D.C.-based writer for Alternet, joins us. She has an article at Alternet, Pepper Spray, Tasers, and LRADs, What's Behind the Explosion of Less Lethal Weapons for Crowd Control. Then we will speak with Mary Beth Fiedler, the founder and coordinator of Move to Amend LA, who spearheaded the successful effort to get the LA City Council to approve a resolution to amend the Constitution to deny corporations personhood. And then we will speak with a Congolese activist about the disputed elections in the Congo that are likely to spark a new round of violence in a country where millions have died despite the presence of the world's largest contingent of UN peacekeepers. Jacques Bahati, the policy analyst for Africa Faith and Justice Network, joins us. I'm now speaking with Rania Kalik, who is a Washington, D.C.-based journalist for Alternet. Some of Rania's articles will be featured alongside other prominent writers in an upcoming book published by Alternet about the Occupy Wall Street movement. And you can find her latest article at alternet.org, Pepper Spray, Tasers, and LRADs, What's Behind the Explosion of Less Lethal Weapons for Crowd Control. Welcome to Background Briefing, Rania Kalik.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Ian.
And let's start with lethal equipment, of which there is a growing amount. Apparently, it all started with something that I'd never heard of, the 1033 program. The 1033 program that this year gave $500 million of military equipment to United States police forces. This was passed in Congress in 1997 to help law enforcement fight terrorism and drugs. So I guess, how does this gel, though? We have the 40-year lowest crime rate in history, you know, a 40-year low in violent crime, yet the police in this country are getting this incredibly lethal military hardware, tanks and machine guns and all that stuff. And apparently this year they've gotten $500 million, and next year there are orders for $2 billion worth. What's going on here?
Well, let me just start by pointing out that that 1033 program you're talking about, while that was instituted in the Defense Authorization Act in 1997, I believe it was. The Defense Authorization Security Act. It actually wasn't where that began. When this entire idea of getting military equipment into the hands of local police departments started was actually with the beginning of the war on drugs. So even before the war on terror, basically, we have the Posse Comitatus Act, which is like a post-Civil War era act, right, that, you know, says that we can't use the military for domestic law enforcement. And so that act was pretty much a law of the land for a very long time, up until the late 70s and then early 80s, when the war on drugs got pretty intense and serious. And it one of the first congressional maneuvers to pass was the Military Cooperation with Law Enforcement Act in 1981. And that act basically directed the military to give local and state law enforcement access to military equipment for research and training. So that was sort of where this all begins. And then there's, you know, a whole slew of other congressional presidential maneuvers in the 80s and even the 90s that basically enhanced the ability of, you know, the military to get its weapons into the hands of local police departments. And then by 1997, with the 1033 program, that basically accelerated that, what's called the military surplus. It's a military surplus program, which is basically, you know, the military has all this equipment that just lies around and doesn't get used because it's constantly getting, you know, new equipment and new funding for even newer equipment. So they basically get to, they sell this equipment to local police departments at a very discounted rate, sometimes they just give it to them for free. And so the 1033 program basically helps accelerate that. But even more than just that, we also have the war on terror, which, really exploded the amount of military weaponry in local police departments because of Department of Homeland Security grants, which is a completely different program. And basically that allocates a certain amount of money to various local and state police departments for them to spend on equipment. And, you know, that can be bulletproof vests or desks, but sometimes it's also, you know, they're not really tanks, these tank-like vehicles and machine guns and whatnot. Right. So it's just this entire industry that's blown up around military-grade equipment for law enforcement.
So what do you think, Rania Kalik, how is it that we have a 40-year low in violent crime, and yet this year the military essentially gave away $500 million in military equipment to the police forces, and next year it'll be $2 billion. There's a disconnect here between reality and the arming of our police.
Yeah, well, this is very much fueled by the war on drugs and then the war on terror. These are the justifications for getting this kind of equipment into the hands of local police departments. They say that, you know, the justification is, well, we need tanks because we need to be able to protect ourselves in case of a terrorist strike or in case of, you know, drug violence or whatever it may be. So with this being the justification, I mean, as long as most war on terror and the war on drugs are, you know, these never-ending, ridiculous wars that really aren't based in reality at all. So it's really dependent on those two situations. The fact that these weapons keep, you know, making their way.
Sure.
Into your backyard.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Rania Kalik, who's a Washington, D.C.-based journalist for Alternet. She has an article at Alternet, Pepper Spray, Tasers, and LRADs, What's Behind the Explosion of Less Lethal Weapons for Crowd Control. And just to be a little specific here about the kind of equipment we're talking about, Cobb County, Georgia, has a new amphibious tank, the same one that the Marines use when they storm the beaches. The sheriff of Richland County, South Carolina, acquired a machine gun-equipped armored personnel carrier that he nicknamed the Peacemaker. And then you mentioned, Rania, the grants from the Department of Homeland Security. They've enabled police departments to buy this vehicle called the Bearcat, which is a 16,000-pound bulletproof truck equipped with battering rams, gun points, tear gas dispensers, and radiation detectors. And to date, that's the one you were thinking about, the Bearcat. To date, more than 500 of these have been essentially given away to police departments. That's 500 is a lot of tanks. I mean,
and some of them are in some of the most, rural areas imaginable. I mean, there's places in Kansas that have these armored vehicles. I mean, where you know, crime is very, very low. The notion that you're going to have some kind of battle, you know, in the middle of a very, very small town is slim to none. So a lot of these weapons are going to places where there's really, you can't even come up with a pretend justification for them.
Right, but my understanding is what happens to these police forces that get this equipment, either essentially given to them by the Pentagon through this congressional act, or from grants from the Department of Homeland Security, when this little town in Kansas has a big tank, then they decide that they have to create a paramilitary unit to justify it and make it a part of their SWAT teams. So isn't it sort of self-reinforcing, the militarization? Once you get the military equipment, then you want to train your guys to use it, surely.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that's one of the scariest parts, is that we basically turned local police departments into these small paramilitary units, even just outside of SWAT teams. SWAT teams look and dress like soldiers, but now so do a lot of our local police officers. And when you dress people like soldiers and you train them like soldiers, they might end up acting like soldiers. And, the scary part about that is that soldiers and police officers have two very, very different roles. Soldiers are supposed to, defeat the enemy, and police officers are supposed to, be peacekeepers and uphold the Constitution and our rights. So it is a really scary dynamic that we've got police officers walking around and, mentally trained to act as though they're soldiers.
Again, I'm speaking with Rania Kalik, who's a Washington, D.C.-based journalist, writes for Alternet. She has an article at Alternet, Pepper Spray, Tasers, and LRADs, What's Behind the Explosion of Less Lethal Weapons for Crowd Control. So let's talk about this other aspect now. We talked about lethal weaponry, battlefield-tested serious weaponry, tanks, machine guns, and God knows what else. Now we're going to talk about the less lethal weapons. These, I believe, evolved, and by the way, they're both used by the military in places like Afghanistan, and the Egyptian military have used it in Tahrir Square, etc. So it's not exclusively about domestic crowd control. But your article points out that it all evolved because of the media, that they wanted more media-friendly weapons. Is that right?
Right. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's almost laughable, but because it is very serious. This is these less lethal weapons. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we talk about pepper spray and tasers and tear gas and all these weapons that are basically meant to disperse crowds or subdue, you know, individuals who may not be complying with police orders, whatever it may be, these weapons are basically meant to coerce people to act a certain way without actually, you know, without physically harming them or you know, killing them. Oftentimes it's not the case. You know, they do end up physically injuring them. But these weapons have their roots in the 60s and 70s when, you know, the rise of television during the civil rights era, when police were using fire hoses and dogs to attack civil rights protesters, and these awful, brutal images of unarmed peaceful protesters, you know, were aired all around the country and the world, and people were outraged, and this led to a lot, you know, this galvanized the civil rights movement, but it also led to riots. And so there was this, there was a commission that was put together to figure out how to basically figure out why these riots and protests were happening, A, but B, also to figure out how to deal with crowds, how to deal with crowd control. This is called the Kerner Commission, and what they found was that, you know, this excessive force that injured and killed protesters was making the situation more tense and making it more likely that there'd be a riot and that there'd be more protests. So it suggested, the commission suggested that there be, you know, research and federal money invested in weapons that aren't lethal along the lines of the way tear gas works. Tear gas was around at the time, but it was mostly used by the military. And so this sort of sparked an entire industry of, you know, these weapons, it sparked these big weapons, or I'm sorry, these long lethal weapons getting into the hands of local police departments. And so the pepper spray, and the taser was invented. But basically this time it was just pepper spray and tasers and tear gas, and mostly tear gas. But after this time, at this point, the military wasn't interested in this kind of weaponry until, you know, you had these 24-hour cable news stations, first and foremost, CNN, the rise of CNN, they were the first station to really, you know, air an entire war. The Gulf War was literally made for TV. And so there was other situations going on as well. There was the Rodney King affair, where he was beaten severely. This black man in L.A. was beaten by the LAPD, and it was caught on videotape. There were situations going on around the world in other countries, the uprisings in Eastern Europe after the Soviet Union fell. So all of this stuff is being aired on TV, and it's having an impact on the way people think about policy decisions. So policymakers were really worried that their ability to do their jobs would be affected by public opinion. So this is when the military got heavily invested in the idea of non-lethal weapons, because this way they could fight wars that were becoming more, you know, urbanized wars, and they could deal with crowds in a way that wouldn't look so bad on television, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah. In other words, you wouldn't want a machine gun mow down women and children on CNN.
Yeah.
But what's going on here with this? There's a group called Homeland Security Research Corporation, which you mentioned in your article. I take it that's just one of the kind of parasites that have cropped up to get their fist in the government trough, since Homeland Security spends $1 trillion without knowing what its mission is. They have predicted that the global market for less lethal or non-lethal weapons will triple by 2020. So yeah, this appears to be a global arms race, but the opponents is the general population.
Right. I mean, if you look at the way the economy is right now globally, you've got a situation where austerity is being imposed on populations on every continent. And you've got a situation where climate change is starting to affect a lot of developing countries that already aren't doing so well. And you've got governments that are largely focused on propping up banks, the banks, rather than helping everyday people. So people are angry. You've got protests in Spain, protests in Greece, you have protests in Italy, and then you've got protests in the Middle East. You've got protests in Egypt and Yemen and Bahrain and all these places that, you've got all these people, crying out for democracy, crying out for their governments to start heeding their demands. And the fear is, of course, that, this is a threat, right? This is a threat to the powers that be. So you've got countries all around the world are actually invested in these non-lethal weapons. I mean, Egypt right now is using tear gas, has used tear gas nonstop on its population, mostly tear gas bought in the U.S. You've got, crowd control sort of the next war to come. And it's already happening. I mean, Occupy Wall Street right now is really showing that, crowd control, and we have riot police. These are unarmed people protesting. We have riot police coming in hundreds and sometimes thousands to come raid Occupy encampments of peaceful, nonviolent protesters. And they're using things like pepper spray and tear gas, and in the case of Oakland, flashbang grenades. And I mean, just these horrendous weapons. But, these weapons compared to machine guns or police dogs are much different when you air them on television, because some people are sort of immune to the brutality. It shelters people from the brutality of these weapons, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Sure. Well, again, I speak with Rania Kalik, who's Washington, D.C.-based journalist for Alternet. She has an article at alternet.org, Pepper Spray, Tasers, and LRADs, What's Behind the Explosion of Less Lethal Weapons for Crowd Control. What are LRADs?
LRADs are long-distance acoustic devices. The sound, the sonic cannons that broadcast a really loud, uncomfortable sound that can actually cause permanent hearing damage if you're too close to it.
I see. So that as opposed to driving Noriega crazy when he was holed up in the Vatican envoy's place in Panama with loud rock music.
Exactly.
But you in your article you quote from a Pentagon report, a joint report. This is 1997 at the time that they instituted this 1033 program. 1997 report, joint report from the Pentagon and the Justice Department about non-lethal weapons. Just quoting it. A further consideration that affects how the military and law enforcement apply forces is the greater presence of members of the media or other civilians who are observing, if not recording, the situation. Even the lawful application of force can be misrepresented or misunderstood by the public. More than ever, the police and the military must be highly discreet when applying force. So we've had the discreet application of force here in Los Angeles when they got rid of the encampment at LA City Hall, and
right.
It was done discreetly. But the violence took place afterwards when they had all these kids penned up in the basement of the Parker Center or in the county jail or in the buses that they used. That's when they roughed them up and deprived them and humiliated them. And so it's so much of what we're talking about seems to be about out of sight and out of mind.
Right, and I mean it's interesting because in LA, I mean, you had a lot of media outlets at first praising the actions taken by the LAPD for being peaceful. And so, yeah, it's interesting how these, that sort of being discreet is, I mean, they're very candid about it. You know, law enforcement, the military, they're very, very candid about it. It's not a secret that these weapons are used for the reason that they're used. And it's not a secret that, when the media is around, you have to act differently. It's just the way it's just the way the game is played.
Right, but what concerns me and what seems to be the trend here, if we have a 40-year low in violent crime, yet they're quadrupling the amount of military equipment next year, that we're talking about tanks and heavy equipment, and the Department of Homeland Security just giving away all of this heavy lethal equipment and non-lethal equipment to all of these police forces, in even in tiny rural communities, So if violent crime goes down and police military equipment goes up, at the end of the day, isn't this going to be used against citizens for political activism, as opposed to, because the violent criminals are few and far between, and less of them apparently, in spite of this drug war and you know, the terrorists, is the last one was some hapless idiot in Times Square. So is that where we're heading?
You know, I would argue that that's, you know, what we're already seeing. And I mean, I'm not saying that we're going to go out into the street and have, you know, militias, you know, police officers, you know, waiting outside with tear gas. But, you know, if you're politically against the ruling elite, if you just look at Occupy Wall Street, that's what we're already seeing, is you see this stuff is being used against peaceful, unarmed protesters. And even without there being protests or crowds to control, these weapons, just the fact that police have them and they're, you know, they get used. I mean, look at all the people that get tasered all the time. You see people getting tasered not for being violent, but for being noncompliant, for just not doing what the police are specifically telling them to do. So you have this sort of culture and this mentality of, it's almost like an authoritarian kind of mentality. Like, you have to listen to our commands, and we have this big intimidation of force, you know?
Well, I guess it's preferable. It's preferable to being shot, though.
I would argue that's true.
if it comes down to the police are going to shoot you or tase you, I guess the latter is probably a preference. Well,
exactly.
Rania, thank you so much for joining us. And next time you write something, let me know, because I'm interested in this subject.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Rania Kalik, who's a Washington, D.C.-based journalist for Alternet. Some of Rania's articles will be featured alongside other prominent writers in an upcoming book published by Alternet about the Occupy Wall Street movement. And you can find her latest article at alternet.org, Pepper Spray, Tasers, and LRADs, What's Behind the Explosion of Less Lethal Weapons for Crowd Control. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how the L.A. City Council just passed an amendment to stop corporations from claiming personhood.
Jack!